My name's Bill Rash. I'm the Director of Transitional Pastors for the EPC. So we are kind of 1 year into an official aspect of a process that we've been working on for multiple years now. So transitional pastor training for us started with Bill Enns and Bob Hopper and Bob Stauffer. And the first training we did was in Youngstown back in 2016. So we've covered a lot of ground now. We're adding a lot to the training. We're building our bench. And this has huge value to congregations. So kind of let me walk you through the rationale. There's my contact information. Just make sure you get that. If your church is thinking about a transitional pastor, we can set up a conference call with your church health coordinator. 15 of our 16 presbyteries have them. I'd love to be part of that conversation. And at some point, you'll have to loop me in because I manage the bench. So just a word about this work as we begin. We are being very intentional in our identification of transitional pastors, of candidates to go through that training. We're very intentional about our process now. So we require that someone go through the training to serve in a church, that while they are serving, they are coached by a transitional pastor who's been there and done the work, is experienced, and can speak into a particular congregational context and community context. We also require assessment on the back end. So we're working on refining and improving the quality of the work that a transitional pastor provides to a congregation. So I've been doing this my entire ministry career. I came to the EPC in 2008 as a church development coordinator for Midwest Presbytery. I've done just recently completed two transitional pastorates, the second of those in Hudson. So this is my passion. This is what winds my clock, and here's why. So here we go. Let me walk you through this. The transitional time between pastors is a natural pause in the activity of a church when there's a natural opportunity to inject church health principles back into the life of a congregation. And this is especially true when you've had a moral failure or when you've had a long-term service of a pastor, because frequently what happens when a pastor serves a long time, there's an initial calling and an initial vision, and a congregation lives through that vision in 5 to 7 years. But there's never an intentional revisioning to reset your shared work over the next 7 or 14 or, we have pastors who've served 28 years or more. So this becomes an opportunity to reset the deck. It's also critical because unless your congregation does a deep look inward, a deep self-assessment, you're not going to have correctly discerned who God's sending you to in this moment. And not knowing that, it becomes very difficult to know the gifts, passions, abilities that you're going to need out of your next pastoral leadership. And so there's huge value in doing this. It also gives you an opportunity to address and do a reset of those areas in which congregational life isn't as healthy as it could be. So interim denotes a time frame. We're not thinking time frame. We're thinking process here. There's a process we work to move you toward church health. In some congregations, it goes much faster. In some congregations, it goes slower. It depends on the issues we're addressing, on the depth and the systemic nature of those issues. So we talk about transitional because it's about a process. So a lot of congregations will ask, how long will this interim time, this transitional time, last? And the answer is, it takes as long as it takes. Because the fruit of the work that you and your transitional pastor, with his coach's help, will do, will shape and govern the fruitfulness of who knows how many years of shared ministry together. So it's critically important, the work you do and how well you do it. So the church does self-assessment. It thinks about and determines its mission and vision. It does a solid pastoral search. But without a transitional pastor, the next pastor will almost inevitably be a transitional pastor because you haven't done the work necessary to make the right match in calling. Now, we're really serious about this. So part of the reason you will talk to me, part of the reason I manage the bench, is I will listen to your session. I will talk with you. I will try to ferret out what the issues are that are confronting your church. So I will try to understand the particular community and cultural context you're in so that I can put a candidate forward that will best meet your needs at this time, right? So I won't be giving you five candidates to pick between. If we have two that meet your needs, that will be an abundance, right? The bench is growing, but it's not where I'd like it to be. But that said, we have a really good bench. The work of a transitional pastor is the work we've been talking about all week. It's to get you back to the main thing. What does the Great Commission look like as you and your church reach out to your community at this time? And by the way, if you would just take one of these and pass them around, it's the material we're covering in print, so you can take it back to your session. And then if you would also take one of these and pass them around, we now have denominationally a transitional pastor process. So this kind of maps how this works between me as director, between your church health coordinator, your ministerial committee. So you've got that information. The advantages of a skilled transitional pastor. So fresh eyes. I can't tell you how critically important this is. We have congregations that, if they're larger congregations, their head of staff, their senior pastor stepping down, think the answer is to make your associate the next head of staff. 9 out of 10 times, that'll be a disaster. And it's a disaster on two fronts because it doesn't move you forward. The associate promoted to head of staff becomes an unintentional interim, an unintentional transitional, because you haven't done the work to correctly identify whether or not he or she really has the gifts to move you forward. So it also provides fresh leadership to clarify roles, to hold staff and lay leadership accountable. Frequently what happens in congregations is we don't do a good job holding our leadership accountable to a shared standard. It gives you consistency in the pulpit, but consistency with a purpose, because the transitional pastor comes in, will sit down and do a SWOT analysis with you, with your session, with your key leaders, with staff, with members, analyzing strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats that the congregation is facing. And those conversations will then shape what happens in worship so that you are addressing issues the congregation is facing. And you will be, some of those may be knowledge issues, some of them may be heart issues, some of them may be application, appropriation, hands doing issues. It also re-equips the elders, the ruling elders, to serve as shepherds. Improvement, you'll discover God's vision for the church. You'll address systemic dysfunction and sin. You can diffuse negative emotions before the new pastor comes. When you've had a long-term pastor and they leave, what's the reaction, the emotional reaction of the congregation?
Anger.
Anger, sometimes.
Disappointment.
Grief. Yeah, all of those. You want to deal with that before your new pastor comes in. You want to... The work of a transitional pastor is to create a clean slate and a clearly defined slate in which the new pastor can work. You're going to discern the gifts and experience needed for a new pastor. You're going to allow the pastoral search team time to be thorough. Here's what frequently happens. The session is notified by the pastor that he's going to be stepping down, whether retiring or resigning or accepting another call. And the response is, okay, we've got to get a search team up and working. The response is to speed up because we feel that emotional weight of the vacancy in leadership. Transitional pastor gives you the opportunity to slow down. And that's critical for this time. So it allows the search team time to be thorough. Some hard pieces of news you need to know. Across the Protestant church, EPC included, in the next 2 to 7 years, 50% of our pastoral leadership will age out of service. 50%. We don't have that many people coming in the pipeline. And so we've got a problem. And the problem is, whereas you once might have had a dozen or 20 or 30 dossiers, now if in a year you have 2, you'll do well. So what's going to attract a candidate to you? If you can answer the question, to whom is God sending us, right? And how are we going to build relationships with that demographic that is gospel transformative, right? So you know who you are, you know where God's sending you, you know how it needs to be carried out. You indicate that you understand your community. That's going to attract a gifted pastor to you, a leader who can take you where you want to go. And then prepare the congregation to receive the new pastor well. So I want to just map the process. So there are 3 stages of transitional pastoral ministry. One is you commit to the transition. You find a transitional pastor to lead you through that time. I'll help. Anybody here from Pacific Northwest? Okay. All of you have church health coordinators. We have one Presbytery Pacific Northwest that does not at this point. All of you do, and so you should contact your coordinator. Coordinator's name should be posted on the website. If not, you've got my phone number. I'll give you my email. It's Bill Rasch, BILLRASCH, .epc@gmail.com, and we'll talk. But we'll help you find the right person to lead you through this time. There'll be a self-assessment of the church's leadership health, a self-assessment of congregational health. We'll walk you through the 5 stages of vitalization. So aligning perception, we'll do a deep self-assessment as part of the work, the shared work of transitional pastor session and the vision team. That will be shared with the congregation. You're going to want to build buy-in, bring the congregation on board. So you'll align perception, you'll establish, you'll identify the vision. You will map a strategy. Our congregations tend to be very good with vision and mission statements, not very good at implementing those statements. And so one of the strengths of what we've done, all of us involved in this on the national Church Health leadership team are practitioners. So this is designed to be eminently doable in a congregational setting. You'll map a strategy. You'll address structural issues. Structural issues may be things that need to be addressed in your building. The way, depending on who you're trying to reach, the way a room's laid out, the way it looks, it may be time issues. We had one congregation that it had that I work with that it had a deep pastoral moral failure that profoundly damaged the congregation. Session's response was to try to create rules and boundaries to prohibit any possible future bad behavior happening from anybody. And so this little church had a set of articles and bylaws that were larger than the EPC's book of order. So sometimes there are structural issues. I mean, sometimes your articles and bylaws mandate you've got to have 15 members on session, and the congregation's grown down in size, and you don't have that kind of leadership. So there are those issues. And then the fifth part is people. We want to get the right people doing in the right places, doing the right things at the right time. That's what's going to grow your congregation. And so then the third stage of the work is you establish the pastoral search team, and you guide the pastoral search team through that work. So just a couple of pieces. Why people might trust a transitional pastor, and especially now in the EPC. So it might be helpful for you to know that we have, we're in an interesting denominational time in the life of the church. We are currently picking up pastors from the Christian Reformed Church, from the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church, from the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, from the Presbyterian Church of America, who are coming in to take our transitional pastor training. So there is a quality and a practicality about our training that is inviting to others in the body of Christ. In the EPC, a transitional pastor has positional authority. So there will be a contract drawn up. Remember, for us in the EPC, the call of a transitional pastor is it's a contracted call between the session and the transitional pastor. Go ahead. Yep.
Wasn't it initially designed to be a covenant? The initial discussion, I remember.
Yeah, so we use the language of call, but the reality is the way we're dealing with a transitional pastor, unless it's an EPC pastor, and so I talked about building the bench. So I have eco pastors, right? Evangelical Covenant Order of Presbyterians. I have PCA pastors. I have an ARP pastor. Looks like I'm going to have an Orthodox Presbyterian pastor who will be serving outside the bounds in our context, right? So those are all handled as transitional pastor stated supply contracts, right? That way, you don't have to subject them through a rigorous examination on the floor of presbytery. They still are vetted by ministerial committee, right? But we're establishing working relationships between denominations for this purpose. Yep. And so on the EPC side, we've also set it up so that a TE, an ordained TE, can move from presbytery to presbytery serving in this role, again, without floor exam. I think we have two presbyteries that are still doing those, even if you're going to be serving in a presbytery but remaining in membership in your former presbytery.
But personally, I just prefer the language of the covenant, understand where
yep.
the pragmatics of it.
So the pragmatics of it are quite honestly driven by the fact that for us to have gone back and amended Book of Order language to make this possible in the easiest way, both for our own folks and for those folks who are working within our bounds that are still Reformed, still Presbyterian, right? Amending the Book of Orders a problem, and it opens up a Pandora's box.
Right, I understand that.
And we were trying to move this work forward. So there's positional authority, because the contract actually delineates the authority of a transitional pastor, and it makes clear that a transitional pastor will be training session and the members in evangelism. It makes clear that you'll be working this church health process. It makes clear that the transitional pastor, although the call is initially for a set period, a year, that there are stated renewal periods depending on how long the work takes. It might be 2 years, it might be a year and a half. And so there'll be that kind of language. It makes clear that that transitional pastor will be in a coaching relationship at this point, either with Bob Stauffer, who's the National Church Health Director, or with me. Down the road, we'll be adding some folks, Mark Farrell in Florida Presbytery, Jeff Moore in Rivers and Lakes, Jim Farrell, who is currently serving in a transitional pastor role in Presbytery of the East. Yep.
Bill, you've been hitting on the edge of it.
Yep.
Rich Swedberg of the West. Who determines and how are they determined when the transitional pastor leaves? And what if the transitional pastor said, well, I really like this place, I'm not going to leave?
It's built into the contract. A transitional pastor cannot secede themselves. And the reason is a transitional pastor needs to come in with a clear view of helping you do the necessary work, which means they're going to take shots. This isn't easy work. This isn't fun work. Not everybody's wired for it. So my entire ministry career, by design and calling, was to go to congregations in steep decline or where there'd been moral failures to reset the deck. And so in one case, I served in a congregation where there'd been back-to-back sexual misconducts. You by the pastor and a youth director. The pastor had created a culture of non-accountability, right? And so even when he left, that culture was still there. The youth director committed sexual misconduct with one of the high school girls. Go ahead.
How many transitional pastors do you have now?
So we have a bench. We probably have a dedicated bench of 4.5 dozen. At any one time, I could use 6 dozen. And part of the problem is we have a lot of churches who need transitional pastors can't afford them.
Okay. There is obviously a shortage of pastors.
Yep.
Churches are searching. Who are these 60 people? I mean, why are they not in church? I just question.
Yes, because we actually cast a vision for this work and doing this work, and we've recruited folks who are wired for it, and this is what they want to do. We actually have some younger couples that have families that are willing to move their families to do the work. This is what winds their clock, right? This is how God's created them and how God's called them to serve. Some of them are older pastors who were ready for a different kind of challenge. I don't want you to think about this as retirement work, because it isn't. It isn't. Transitional pastors work hard, really, really, really hard. The work is demanding and intense. And typically a transitional pastor will serve, will take a little breathing period, and then answer another call. Go ahead. Yep.
I realize that there is a real shortage.
Yes.
And I work with, I'm not searching in my church.
Right.
And I'm trying to, what has been the average time so far for transitional pastor?
In terms of between a congregation identifying a need and getting a transitional pastor in place?
No.
Okay.
The transitional pastors that have served.
You're typically looking at a year and a half process.
Our contract, we have a transitional pastor. Our contract states not to exceed 2 years.
Yep.
It's a 1 year contract.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, so you're defining the period of work.
Do you set the compensation level?
Yes. So we challenge congregations to not offer a package less than their previous pastor was getting. And there's a reason for that. You're bringing in somebody who's doing demanding work, who's been trained and equipped to do the work, who is being coached while they're doing the work. There is a value to this, right? We're not sending broken down, retired, right? At this point, if I weren't doing this work, I'd still be doing a transitional pastorate. But you understand, under the structure with which we serve now at 70, then I'd have to also be meeting with ministerial committee, because I'd need a series of 1 year, depending on how long the work took, basically exemptions, permissions to continue to serve. So I'm 71, but I'm still a hyperactive child. So I'm not ready to hang them up yet. Other questions?
You're saying that the compensation will be whatever they're paying their current pastor.
Yep. Yep, whatever that package was. You're going to make
so,
that.
But you're saying that some can't afford it.
Well, so we have small churches that could use a transitional pastor to move them back to church health, but they don't have the resources. They can't afford a full-time call. And it's a problem. It's one we're working on, but we're not there yet. Yeah. Other questions about that? So I want to talk about the prior service piece. So you're... Transitional pastor has experiential authority. They also have that performance authority, and the personality is there. So one of the things that happens when we do training, we have lots of pastors, older pastors, who come and attend the training thinking about doing this work, right? But a lot of them, after they understand what's required, self-select out. The training actually serves to deter them from doing the work. And then, Jim Farrell's part of the, I mentioned his name earlier, part of the National Church Health Leadership Team. He's doing a transitional pastorate in Pennsylvania, and we're thankful for that. Other questions about that part of it? So we have kind of a dance we do here between a church in transition, the ministry that will be done by that church, the work of the transitional pastor, but also there's the involvement of presbytery committees and the church health coordinator. And so your church health coordinator, while we're looking for a transitional pastor, making that match, may come in and do some pre-assessment pieces with session and leaders that will help us determine what the best fit is, right? So, and obviously ministerial committee is involved. And so there is that dance that goes on between all of these folks. So we are really serious. And we press our transitional pastors to be folks who are committed and continue to be committed to the Word and growing in the Word and walking closely with Jesus Christ, including being in accountable relationships outside of the congregation, because they need support that you're not going to be able to provide. And, right, so there have to be some clear lines of separation there. And while the fifth one is the Christ Passions. By no means is this a ranking of order, all right? So internal challenges. You understand part of the reason we do the training, part of the reason we do the assessment of folks on the front end is there are personal challenges. Wait a minute, go back one. There are personal challenges that would move you to not do the work. The temptation is to not say the hard things that need to be said, to not deal with the difficult issues that need to be dealt with, to play it safe. There's a pride piece, because at this point, the work doesn't have the standing in the EPC in terms of its value and denominationalized relative to particularly head of staff positions, but any TE position. There's the challenge of fear, because you're risking a lot. You're going to uproot and move to serve this congregation. And you're going to embed yourself in this community, because it's not just a matter of meeting your needs, it's helping you know and understand your community so that you can effectively reach them with the gospel. The challenge of control is a piece, because a part of the work is training and equipping leaders to take it on. So you're establishing a new DNA with a congregation. You're seeding that DNA into your congregational leaders, and you're gonna hand it off. You're gonna let go and let them.
I understand what you mean by establishing a new DNA.
Right. So there are things in congregation. So let's say you have a congregation of 200 members, but you've been slowly losing membership. At some point, clearly, you've lost the big picture, right?
Or your church is old.
Or
you went through COVID, or people left.
Well, I know. I absolutely know all those pieces are there, but a part of that still is, at some point along the road, you weren't making disciples. You didn't figure out how to make disciples.
That's clear. And
didn't figure out how to share good news of Jesus Christ in those contexts.
Possibly, yes. Yep. I will grant you that for a large part of our congregation, that is what happened. My question is, that may not be the whole picture.
Well, obviously not. Obviously, there are lots of factors here, but some of those factors we control, some of those factors we don't. The factors we control do we have a disciple-making DNA? Are we all small e evangelists? Has that been seeded and woven into the culture of the church?
So that
everybody in the congregation is looking at their circles of relationship, praying for those folks who aren't part of the body of Christ, whether it's family, friends, acquaintances, coworkers, associates, strangers, right? You're praying for them. Why? So that when the Holy Spirit opens a door in those relationships, you're ready to share three circles.
So I think I understand you, but
yep.
Can I put it in my words?
Sure.
So when we, I'm just asking if I'm kind of on the right track. So when we have a big shift, and so for our congregation, I say that our big shift was COVID, and we wore out our pastor and he left.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking along pretty well before COVID. COVID happened, the bottom fell out of everything. And we were scrambling just to worship. Forget about evangelism, forget about anything else. And so then COVID ended and we got back to evangelism. We really did. But we were much more cautious. So part of our problem with DNA, I think, is getting rid of the caution, maybe. Or the other thing that we have a real problem with, at least in my opinion, in the Presbyterian Church, is we think we know what we need to do when we really need to step out and wonder. And so I have a hard time sometimes when we have a list of to-dos.
Okay. And I'm not saying these are to-dos. I'm just trying to make you aware of internal issues that a transitional pastor has, or the external issues that a transitional pastor faces.
See,
right?
I'm so sorry that we're dealing with these types of abuse, and that's just not our experience at all in our church. We don't have those issues of sexual abuse or moral misconduct.
And a lot of congregations don't. But a lot of congregations have also lost their way because they quit doing the very things that allowed them to remain vibrant, to grow, to make disciples, both of adults and children.
Well, then I have one more question,
yep.
And I'll hush up because I know this is a lot more useful for other people. I have a specific issue with transitional because of how I've heard it explained, that a transitional pastor isn't going in to establish relationship.
Not true. Absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. A transitional pastor busts their chops in the first 3 months they're there to establish as broad a web of relationships as they can, because that's how you affect change in the church, and that's how you understand the true issues facing a congregation. The better you know them, right, the more effectively you can lead them. Go ahead.
Is the transitional pastor the head of staff?
The transitional pastor is head of staff. Yep. And moderator of session.
Right. Okay.
Yep. Go ahead.
I work with churches in my ministry, so.
Yep.
I got four churches now that are soon going to have a vacancy or have a vacancy. All four are retired because the pastor is retired.
Right.
I would say two are in need. Two are healthy churches.
Okay.
Are you saying that you think that the position of the church health is that every church ought to have a transitional pastor?
Let me tell you how Allegheny does it. Allegheny's does it. And it works for Allegheny's.
This is their answer.
Their answer is that every congregation facing a pastoral transition utilizes a transitional pastor unless they get the permission of the ministerial committee. Unless they can make the case so demonstrably effectively that they don't need those skills.
That sounds like a top-down dictatorship.
Well, so we do live. Most
Presbyterians. Our Presbytery would never do that.
Right, and most Presbyteries aren't there. But what I'm saying is I think in most instances a transitional pastor is going to be helpful to a congregation facing a transition. And I think the reality is a lot of congregations think they know better and they don't. And so I've just experienced a lot of call failures where then we're asked to clean up the mess on the back end because they haven't done the work to effectively call a new pastor, to establish the gifts and skills and motivators needed. So I'll push you on that.
In one case, the pastor is staying on until they get a pastor.
Okay.
Questions about that, primarily because I think every church needs a gap.
I agree.
But if they decide to get a transitional pastor, that would really cause a problem.
It would.
Why?
Well, then in fact, he's going to be there. The retiring pastor is going to be there.
Right.
And then you've got another pastor that's come in who's not the permanent.
Right.
Why doesn't the pastor just retire so something new can happen?
Well, this is a small town and he's going to be living there.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
I can't affect that.
Yeah.
That's
go ahead.
Yeah. I just thought maybe, I know this is probably important for everyone who's here, I thought I could share some of my experiences real quick as another piece to it.
Yep.
My name is Bill Moore. I'm the church health coordinator for the Coastal Mid-Atlantic Presbytery, but I've only been in that role for just a couple months. So tell a story about before I was in the role. Our church outside of Richmond, Virginia, had been meeting in a school up until COVID. And then when COVID happened, obviously we couldn't meet in the school. So we were kind of nomadic. But we had had a lease on a space in a shopping center we were working on remodeling. And we were due to move into July of 21. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, which is a really big deal for us as a church. May 21, so 3 months before that, our founding pastor took a call somewhere else, which is a major kind of bomb in the system, right?
Yep.
If you think this is the worst possible time. So there's a lot of pressure to say, hey, we need to get somebody new.
Yep.
I was serving as the assistant at the time. And so I think our session wisely took the route of a transitional pastor, which was hard in some ways because we wanted to go.
Yep.
This is our first new space. We want to go. But one of the biggest strengths of that is that we had 13 months to then really figure out who is the kind of pastor we need for moving forward long term.
Yep.
And so we got to spend that transitional time figuring out how do we get to not just 1 year down the road, but 10 years down the road. And that was really, really vital for us. And so I know the transitional pastor's stuff is challenging, but I saw the value of taking that transitional time as a meaningful time for our church.
Right.
And what I like is that when the transitional pastor comes, the church takes an assessment, not only of the whole church, but each individual. And sometimes we get stuck in our old ways, and we just keep doing the same thing, the same way, and we get the same kind of message.
Yeah.
Our church lost 3 pastors in several years, and it hurts.
Yep.
We're dying because of it.
Yep.
And that's because we just didn't assess like we should have.
Yeah. Yeah. Other questions? Yeah. So I hold. But this is what I do. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what my ministry has been committed to, even before we established this role in the EPC. So I'm a huge advocate of the value for congregations, and have seen too many congregations not go this way to their detriment. But you're absolutely right. The reality is every presbytery in the EPC functions differently on virtually everything. I mean, we have no uniformity there. And that's why you actually have a protocol. And this is suggested. You talked about we're permissive. This is suggested. It's not mandated for how the call process would work. Other questions? And obviously, you can see the issues that a transitional pastor might face on a local setting. I love this passage from 2 Corinthians. Paul says, "We're the aroma of Christ to God among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. To one, a fragrance from death to death. To other, a fragrance from life to life. Who's sufficient for these things? Such is the confidence we have through Christ toward God. Not that we're sufficient ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God who made us competent." Here's why I love this. In high school, sophomore in high school, new to Christian faith, I had the opportunity to cross paths with a Jewish theologian, Abraham Joshua Heschel. And Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Yeah.
And Heschel said something that absolutely captured my mind and my heart and my being. He said, "Unless life is a form of worship, your worship has no life." And in that moment, that set me on the trajectory to where I am now, right? Because it had profound implications. It meant my character had to be an act of worship. My service, the things I do, the words I say have to be an act of worship. My relationships have to be an act of worship. It set me on a path to rethinking how I'm going to live in the context of marriage, right? In the context of community, of church, in a way that called people, pointed people to the God who calls us from life to death. And really, these are the kinds of folks we're trying to raise up and provide for you. Folks who are absolutely in love with Jesus Christ and passionate about God's word and its transformative power. Go ahead.
I told you I wasn't going to ask any more questions.
So then, just want to remind you of the stages of the work. And then want to set the traditional view of what Lauren Mead called an interim pastor against what we think of as a transitional pastor. Lauren Mead said, a transitional pastor is one who comes to terms with the history of the church, helps the congregation develop a new identity, facilitates shifts of power, rethinks denominational ties. In many cases, our churches are very loosely connected to their presbyteries to their detriment, right? And part of that, particularly for congregations that came out of the PCUSA, they had experienced traumatic life in their former presbyteries and denomination, and so this becomes mission critical, and then building a commitment to a new leadership and a new future. But here's how we think of it: our goal for transitional pastors is to love Christ and His church, and to be His instrument to bring health to His flock, and to prepare her to receive her new pastor shepherd. It involves the things that Lauren Mead said, right? But it's more. It's richer, it's deeper, it's more vibrant, it's more transformative. Okay, questions?
Do you find people trying to put the mantle of interim onto the transitional?
Sure, but part of the work of session and the transitional pastor are to educate the congregation on the work of the transitional pastor, the role the transitional pastor is going to play with the congregation. I'm not here to help you mark time. You don't get to coast. We're going to do serious work together. And at times it's going to be demanding, right? But it's what needs to be done so that we can move back to health and vitality.
A part of the problem for at least, because we're way out, we're tiny anyway.
Yep.
But part of the problem that I saw when we lost Reverend Fulmer years and years and years ago was that we considered the interim kind of a joke.
Yep.
And then we found another wonderful, fabulous pastor. We kind of still had that mentality coming into this new era.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no joke about this. This is serious work. We're invested in the work. We support the work from the top of the denomination down. At every level, we are invested in this work. Other questions?
I'm just wondering what you might recommend for a church that doesn't maybe afford a full-time transitional.
Yeah, so depending on the area, we might have a retired pastor who wouldn't have to uproot. That reduced costs. That makes something available that might not be otherwise possible. And then beyond that, I think we'd have to get creative. We'd have to figure out how we would make it happen. But again, it depends on location and presbytery and context, because there might be a pool of folks we can draw on. Go ahead.
Would you ever have a transitional pastor help two churches with the transition, or would that be too much?
Yes. I've been having a next group. Okay, let me finish. Well, I'm going to dismiss you all. Come up, and we'll continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.